It's your silly empty and dynamite, dynamite. And Chessie's here too. Hello, Chessie. Hello, Dynamite. How are you today, Dino? We're having a beautiful day. And we love you. Yes, we do. We love everybody today, don't we? Yes, we do. We're so happy. We're very, very happy. Well, today it's Silly Auntie Sissy, Adventures with Silly Auntie Sissy. We're here to say hello, hello, and watch the sunshine. It's the sixth day before Christmas on the first day of Christmas my true love gave to me. On the first day of Christmas, what did my true love give to me? Do you know? Do you know what my true love gave to me on the first day of Christmas? On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a partridge in a pear tree. On the second day of Christmas, my true love gave to me two turtle doves and a partridge in a pear tree. On the third day of Christmas, my true love gave to me three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the fourth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the fifth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me five golden rings, four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the sixth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me six geese a-laying, five golden rings, four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. Oh my, that's a lot to say, Dino. Yeah, I know, Silly Auntie Sissy. Let me sing with you. On the seventh day of Christmas, because somewhere in the world they're on the seventh day. If you're listening, this is for you. On the seventh day of Christmas, my true love gave to me seven swans a-swimming, six geese a-laying, five golden rings, four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. And what did I get on the eighth day of Christmas? Well, it has to do with maids. I'm milking, and we'll find out if Silly Auntie Sissy can say it all on the eighth day of Christmas. All right, guys, that is all for that. Are we happy? Let's be happy, because everyone's feeling better today. Yay, Dino, we did it. All right, and now for the miracle of the secret garden. Thou mustn't waste no time. Remember, we left Mary, and she just left Colin, and she convinced Colin to go out into the gardens. Of course, Mary did not wake early the next morning. She slept late because she was tired, and when Martha brought her breakfast, she told her that though Colin was not quite, he was ill and feverish, as he always was after he had worn himself out with a bit of crying. Mary ate her breakfast slowly as she listened. He says he wishes that would please go and see him as soon as he can. It's queer what fancy he's taken to thee. Thou did not give him last night for sure, didn't thy? Nobody else would have dared it, poor lad. He's been spoiled till salt won't save him. Mother says as to two worst things as can happen to a child is never to have his own way, or always to have it. She doesn't know what is the worst. That was in a fine temper, thyself too, but he always says to me when I went into that room, please ask Miss Mary if she'll come and talk to me. Think of him saying, please, will you go, miss? I'll go and see Dickens first, said Mary. No, I'll go and see Colin first and tell him. I know what I'll tell him, with a sudden inspiration. She had her hat on when she appeared in Colin's room, and for a second he looked disappointed. He was in bed. I'm glad you came, he said. My head aches, and I ache all over. I'm tired. Are you going somewhere? Mary went and leaned. I won't be long. I'm going to Dickens, but I'll come back. Colin, it's something about the garden. His face brightened, and a little color came into it. Oh, is it? He cried out. I dreamed about it all night. I heard you say something about gray changing into greens, and I dreamed I was standing in a place all filled with trembling little green leaves, and there are birds on nests everywhere, and they look so sweet and still. I'll lie and think about it until you come back. In 5 minutes, Mary was with Dickens in the garden. I came over by pony this morning, he said. It's a good little chap. Jump in. Jump is. I brought these two in my pockets. There one he called Nut, and this one out of here is called Shell. When he said Nut, one squirrel leaped on to his right shoulder, and when he said Shell, the other one leaped on to his left shoulder. When they sat down to the grass with Captain curled at their feet, solemnly listened on a tree, and Nut said, Shell nosing about to him. It seemed to Mary that it would be scarcely bearable to leave such delightfulness, but when she came back to tell her story, somehow the look in Dickens' face gradually changed her mind. She could see he felt sorry for Cullen than she did. He looked at the sky and all about him. Just listen to them birds. Look at them darting about and heckling at them, calling to each other. Come springtime, seems like all the world's calling. When he was very much interested, he often spoke in a quiet, broad Yorkshire, though at other times he seemed to modify his dialect, so that Mary could better understand. But he loved his broad Yorkshire, and in fact been trying to learn to speak it herself. So she did a little now. Oh, ay, that wee mun. Yes, indeed. I'll tell thee what was due first. And Dickon grinned, because when the little wench tried to twist her tongue into speaking Yorkshire, it amused him very much. He took a gradually fancy to he. When I go back to the house, we talk to him. I'll ask him if thou cannot come to see him tomorrow. When she stopped, she was quite proud of herself. She had never made a speech in Yorkshire before, and she had remembered very well. That mum took a bit of Yorkshire like that to Mr. Collin. That'll make him laugh, and there's no doubt as talk for him as laughing is. Mother says she believes in half an hour's good laugh every morning, and you'd cur a chap as was making ready for a toughest fever. I'm going to talk Yorkshire to him this very day. The garden had reached this time when every day and every night it seemed as if magicians were passing through, as if drawing loveliness out of the earth and the boughs with wands. It was hard to go away and leave it all, particularly as Nut had actually crept on to her dress and Shell had scrambled down to the trunk of the apple tree they sat under and stayed there looking at her with inquiring eyes. But she went back to the place, and when she sat down close to Colin's bed, he began to sniff as Dickon did. You smell like flowers and fresh things. What does you smell of? It's the wind from the moor, said Mary, when Colin asked. It comes on sitting the grass under a tree with Dickon and with Captain and Scott and Nell and Shell. She said it broadly as she could, and you did not know how broadly Yorkshire sounds until you have heard someone speak it. Colin began to laugh. What are you doing? I never heard you talk like that before. How funny it sounds. I'm giving thee a bit of Yorkshire. I can't talk as gradly as Dickon and Martha can, but thou sees I can shape a bit. Doesn't thou understand a bit of Yorkshire where there hears it? Aye, the Yorkshire lads are bred and born. Eh, wouldn't thou know shame to thy face? And then she began to laugh, too, and they both laughed until they could not stop themselves, and they laughed and laughed until the room echoed, and Mrs. Medlock, opening the door to come in, looked into the corridor and stopped, stood listening, amazed. Well, upon my word, Yorkshire herself, because there was no one to hear her. And she was astonished. Whoever heard thy laugh, whoever on earth would like have thought it. There was so much to talk about. It seemed as if Colin could hear and could not hear enough of Dickens. He was rather thin with living on a moor grass. Dickens had his head trolled up to him and put his head across his shoulder, and then Dickens had talked into his ear, and Jump had talked back in odd little whinnies and puffs and snorts. Dickon had made him give Mary his small front hoof and kissed her on his cheek with his velvet muzzle. "Does he really understand everything Dickens says?" Colin asked. "It seems if he does, Dickens says anything we'll understand if you're friends with it, for sure. But you have to be friends for sure." Colin lay quite a little while, and his strange gray eyes seemed to be staring at the wall. But Mary saw he was thinking. "I wish I was friends with things, but I'm not. I never had anything to be friends with, and I can't bear people." "Can't you bear me?" asked Mary. "Yes, I can. It's funny, but I even like you. Ben Weatherstaff said I was like him. He said he'd warrant we both get the same nasty tempers. I think you are like him, too. We're all three alike, you and I and Ben Weatherstaff. He said we were neither of us much to look at, and we are as sour as we looked. But I don't feel as sour as I used to before I knew the Robin and Dickens." "Didn't you feel as if you hated people?" "Yes," answered Mary, without any affection. "I should have detested you if I had seen you before I saw the Robin and Dickens." Colin put out his thin hand and touched her. "Mary, I wish I hadn't said what I did about sending Dickens away. I hated when you said he was like an angel, and I laughed at you, but perhaps he is. Well, it was rather funny to say it. But if an angel did come to Yorkshire and live on the moor, if there was a Yorkshire angel, I believe he'd understand the green things and know how to make them grow. And he would know how to talk to wild creatures as Dickens does." "I wouldn't mind Dickens looking at me," said Colin. "I want to see him. I'm glad you said that." Because quite suddenly it became in my mind that this was the minute to tell him Colin knew something new was coming. "'Cause what?" he said eagerly. "Can I trust you? I trusted Dickens because birds trusted him. Can I trust you for sure, for sure?" she imploded. Her face was so solemn. "Yes, yes. Well, Dickens will come to see you tomorrow morning, and he'll bring his creatures with him." "Oh!" Colin cried out in delight. "But that's not all. The rest is better. There is a door into the garden. I found it. It is under the ivy on the wall. If I had been a strong, healthy boy, Colin would probably have shouted, 'Hooray, hooray, hooray!' But he was weak and rather hysterical. 'Oh, Mary, shall I see it? Shall I go into it?' 'Of course you'll see it. Don't be silly.' And she was so unhysterical and natural and childish that she brought him to his senses and began to laugh at himself. In a few minutes afterwards, she was sitting on her stool again. 'It is just what you thought it would be,' he said at last. 'It sounds just as if you had really seen it.'" Mary hesitated about 2 minutes and boldly spoke. "I have seen it. I have been in it. I have found the key and I got in weeks ago. But I didn't tell you. I didn't because I was so afraid I couldn't trust you for sure. It has come." One more chapter. We'll read 2 because that's the Christmas gift to you, my friends. Of course, Dr. Craven had been sent for the morning after Colin had his tantrum. He was always sent for at once. And he always found a white stricken boy lying in bed, so hysterical that he was ready to break into fresh sobbing. In fact, Dr. Craven dreaded and detested the difficulties of these visits. "How is he?" "He will break a blood vessel in one of those fits some day." "Well, sir, you'll scarcely believe your eyes. The plain, sour-faced child that's almost as bad as himself has just bewitched him. How she's done it, there's no telling. The Lord knows she's nothing to look at, and you scarcely even hear her speak. But she did what none of us dare do. She just flew at him like a little cat last night and stomped her feet and ordered him to stop screaming." The door to Dr. Craven beheld when he entered was indeed rather astonishing to him. As Mrs. Medlock opened the door, he heard laughing and chattering. Colin was on his sofa in his dressing gown. "These long spares and blue ones will have a lot of those. They're called defilms. Dickens says they're Langspurs, made big and grand. They're clumps there already. Then they say Dr. Craven. Then they saw Dr. Craven and stopped. Mary became quite still. I'm sorry to hear you were ill last night, my boy. I'm better now, much better, Colin answered. I'm going out in my chair in a day or two. It's fine. I want some fresh air. It must be a very fine day, he said, and you must be very careful not to tire yourself. Fresh air won't tire me, said the young Rajaya. As there had been occasions when these young gentlemen had sharked aloud with rage and insisted that fresh air would kill them. I thought you did not like fresh air, he said. I didn't when I'm by myself, but my cousin is going out with me. And the nurse, of course. No, I do not want the nurse. My cousin knows how to take care of me. I'm always better when she is with me. Dr. Craven felt alarmed. If this tiresome, hysterical boy should chance to get well himself, he would lose all chance of inheriting Mithelswaite. He must be a strong boy and a steady boy, he said, and I must know something about him. Who is he? Who's taking you? What is his name? It's Dickon, Mary spoke. Suddenly, she saw that in a minute Dr. Craven's serious face relaxed into a relieved smile. Oh, Dickon, if it is Dickon, you'll be safe enough. He's as strong as a moor pony is Dickon, and he's trustworthy. He's a trusted lad of Yorkshire. Did Dickon teach you that? Said Dr. Craven, laughing outright. I'm learning as if it were French. It's like a native dialect in India. Very clever people try to learn them. I like it, and so does Colin. Very well. If it amuses you, perhaps it won't do you any harm. Did you take your brum maid last night, Colin? No, I won't take it at first. And after Mary made me quiet, she talked me to sleep in a low voice. That sounds soothing. More perplexed than ever, and said the doctor, glancing sideways at Mistress Mary sitting on her stool. You must remember. I don't want to remember. When I lie by myself and remember, I begin to have pains everywhere. If there is a doctor anywhere who could make you forget you were ill instead of remembering it, I would have him brought here. It's because my cousin makes me forget. She makes me better. Dr. Craven had never made such a short stay after a tantrum. Usually he was obliged to remain very long and do a great many things. This afternoon he did not give any medicine or leave any new orders, and he was squared any disagreeable scenes. Well, sir, could you have believed it? Said Mrs. Medlock. Certainly as a new state of affairs, said the doctor when he reached Mrs. Medlock, and there's no denying it's a better one. I believe Susan Sowerby's right. I do that. I stopped in her cottage on my way to Thelwhite yesterday and had a talk with her, and she says to me, well, Sarah Ann, she might be a good child, and she might be a pretty one. Might not be a children, but she's a child, and children needs children. She's the best sick nurse I know, said Dr. Craven. When I find her in a cottage, I know the chances are that I shall save my patient. She's got a way with her. Has Susan... She went on quite vulnerably. I've been thinking all my morning of one thing she said yesterday. She says once when I was giving the children a bit of preach, after they'd been fighting, I says to them when I was at school, my geography told as thy word was shaped like an orange, and I found out before I was 10 that the old orange doesn't belong to nobody. She's a shrewd woman, said Dr. Craven. Well, she's got a way of saying things, ended Mrs. Medlock, much pleased. Sometimes I've said to her, Ellie, Susan, if you was a different woman and didn't talk such broad Yorkshire, I've seen the times when I should have said you was clever. That night, Colin slept without once wakening. He felt so curiously comfortable. It was actually nice to be awake, and he turned over and stretched his limbs luxuriously. And he turned over and again. He felt as if he might... if tight strings which had held him had loosened themselves and let him go. It was so nice to have things to think about, and he had been awake more than 10 minutes when he heard feet running along the corridor, and Mary was at the door. The next minute she was in the room, and had run across to his bed, bringing with her a waft of fresh air full of the scent of the morning. You've been out, you've been out. There's that nice smell of leaves. So beautiful, she said, breathless. You never saw anything so beautiful. Spring has come, Dickens says so, has it? Said Colin. Open the window, perhaps we may hear golden trumpets. And though he laughed, Mary was at the window in a moment before it was opened wide, and freshness and scents and bird songs were pouring through. That's fresh air. That's what Dickens does when he likes. Lay on your back and draw in long breaths of it. That's what Dickens does when he's lying on the moor. He says he feels it in his veins, and it makes him strong. She was only repeating what Dickens had told her, but she caught Colin's fancy. Forever and ever, does it make him feel like that? Mary was at his bedside again. Things are crowding up out of the earth, and there are flowers uncurling and buds on everything, and the green veil has covered nearly all the gray, and the birds are in such a flurry about their nests for fear they may be too late, that some of them are even fighting for places in the secret garden. And the rose bushes look as wick can be, and there are primroses in lanes and woods, and the seeds are planted. We planted her up, and Dickon has brought the fox and the crow and the squirrels and a newborn lamb. And then she paused for breath. The newborn lamb Dickon had found 3 days before laying in its dead mother. He had taken it to the cottage wrapped in his jacket, and he led it near the fire and fed it with warm milk. A soft thing, with darling silver baby face and legs rather long for its body. Mary had sat under a tree with its limp warmness huddled on her lap. She felt as if she were too full of strange joy to spark. A lamb, a living lamb who was on her lap, like a baby. She was describing it with great joy, and when Colin was listening and lying in long breaths of air, when the nurse entered, she stood a little at the right of the open window. She sat stifling in a room many a warm day because her patient was sure that open windows gave people cold. Are you sure you're not chilly, Master Colin? No, was the answer. I'm breathing long breaths of fresh air. The nurse went away, concealing a smile, to give the order for two breakfasts. She found the servants' hall a more amusing place than the invalid's chamber, and just now everyone wanted to hear the news from upstairs. There was a great deal of joking about the unpopular recluse who the cook said had found his master and good for him. The servants had all been very tired of the tantrums, and the butler was a man with a family, and more than once expressed his opinion that the invalid would be all the better for a good hiding. When Colin was on his sofa, and the breakfast far too was put under the table, he made an announcement to the nurse in his most Raja-like manner. A boy and a fox and a crow and two squirrels and a newborn lamb. I want them brought upstairs as soon as they come, he said. You are not to begin playing with the animals in the servants' hall and keep them there. I want them here. The nurse gave a slight gasp. Yes, sir, she said. I'll tell you what to do. You can tell Martha to bring them there. A boy is Martha's brother. His name is Dickon, and he is an animal charmer. I hope the animals won't hate Master Colin, said the nurse. I told you he was a charmer, said Colin. Charmers' animals never bite. There are snake charmers in India, and they can put their snakes ahead in their mouths. Goodness, shuddered the nurse. They ate their breakfast with the morning air pouring on them. You'll begin to get fatter just as I did, she said, as Colin ate and ate. I never wanted breakfast when I was in India, and now I always want it. I wanted mine this morning. Perhaps it was the fresh air. When do you think Dickon will come? He was not long in coming. In about 10 minutes, Mary held up her hand. Listen, did you hear Ka? Colin listened and heard it. Yes, he answered. That's Scoot. Do you hear a bleat, Atenio? Oh, yes, said Colin, quite flushing. That's a newborn lamb. Dickon's moorhead boots were thick and clumsy, and though he tried to walk quietly, they made a clumping sound. If you please, sir, Dickon's here, and his creatures. Dickon came in smiling. After Martha announced him, his nicest wide smile. Noel sat on his left shoulder and stood on his right, and Shell's hand and paws peeped out of his coat pocket. Colin slowly sat up and stared as he had stared when he first saw Mary. But this was a stare of wonder and delight. The truth was that, in spite of it all he had heard, he had not in the least understood what the boy would be like, and that his fox and his crow and his squirrels and his lamb were so near to him in his friendliness that they seemed almost to be part of himself. Colin had never talked to a boy in his life, and was so overwhelmed by his own pleasure and curiosity that he did not even think of speaking. But Dickon did not feel the least shy or awkward. He had never felt embarrassed because the crow had not known his language, and he had only stared and not spoken to him the first day they met. Creatures were always like that until they found out about you. He walked over to Colin's sofa and put the newborn lamb quietly on his lap, and immediately the little creature turned to the warm velvet and began to nuzzle and nuzzle into its folds. "What's it doing?" cried Colin. "What does it want?" "It wants its mother. I brought it to thee a bit hungry because I knowed thou'd like to see it fed." He knelt down by the sofa and took a feeding bottle from his pocket. "Come on, little one," he said, turning the small woodly white head. "This is what's after. They'll get more out of this than thee will out of silk velvet coats." After that, there was no wondering what to say. By the time the lamb fell asleep, the questions poured forth. He told them how he had found the lamb just as the sun was rising 3 mornings ago. "I'm almost lost him but for the song, and I was wondering how a chap could hear it when it seemed as if he'd get out of the wood world in a minute. When he talked, Scout flew solemnly in and out of the open window, and cawed remarks about the scenery, while Null and Shell made excursions into the big trees outside and ran up and down trunks and explored branches.